we begin this edition of Ozarks with something that began construction 80 years ago today. Ozarks Electric, then officially called Ozarks Rural Electric Cooperative Corporation, was brought into fruition when seven women and men met and signed the rules of incorporation 80 years ago today. It would still be a few years until the lights began coming on in places like Mount Comfort and Savoy, but the cooperative nature of working together had begun. Scott Davis, a videographer, found several people in Arkansas and Oklahoma who remember the first day, or perhaps even better, the first night, when electricity came to the house, and he's created a documentary about their memories.
I think probably the refrigerator was about the main thing. And because we had got by with everything else, but there was times in the year that you just couldn't hardly manage, you know, without.
My favorite thing about getting electricity was taking the pressure off of work that you had to do, all the convenience of it.
Earlier this month, we invited Scott Davis to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about the project. We also invited Penny Storms, Manager of Media and Public Relations at Ozark Electric. 5 years ago, she put together a book about the cooperative's first 75 years. She says the cooperative was born out of sheer need.
There were a number of rural farm families who were very interested in getting electricity that was not available to them at the time. So they actually went out on their own. I mean, they collectively gathered and signed our articles of incorporation in May, and sort of laid out a plan that they would go and recruit as many people as they could to pay a $5 membership fee with the promise of electricity to come to their home or farm.
Now, 1938, rural Oklahoma, rural Arkansas, $5 is not an inexpensive amount.
Absolutely not. I mean, they had to save up for that, and they were digging in, but there were so many people that knew this would make their lives much easier and their work much faster. They were willing to sacrifice to donate or to pony up the $5 that was requested of them.
Now, it wasn't instantly that in early 1939, everyone suddenly in eastern Oklahoma and northwest Arkansas had electricity. It took a while.
Yes, it did. Actually, our first 200 members were energized in 1940, I think. It might have been later, 39, but they were actually up around Taneytown. After we got electricity to that number of people, it was became a known fact that across the line into Oklahoma, nobody was serving over there at all. And there were people over there, dairy farmers and whatnot, who needed electricity just as badly. Chicken farming had become a product. Washington County was a seat of agriculture in the state, and the orchards and things like that kind of gave way to the poultry industry after the Depression and into the 30s and 40s. So we also signed an agreement that we would go just across the line into Oklahoma, and some of our next members who received power were actually around Westville, Oklahoma.
In fact, one of the first offices.
Absolutely.
Was in Westville.
And it was in a person's home. Clint Thomas was the man who worked for us, and his living room had a little curtain up, and his wife had a little desk where she could accept payments, but he was the man who ran our Westville operation, our Oklahoma operation at the time.
Scott, I want to bring you in. You created this DVD, these videos. You met people who remembered living without electricity, right?
Yes, and the stories they told were very compelling. I first started interviewing some people out in Cane Hill, not really related to this project, but they all were talking about getting electricity and how it changed their lives and how you could see the power coming to them and how excited they were. And so I did a series of interviews and talked to people about it. And some of the linesmen I talked to over in Oklahoma said that the property owners would even help dig the poles, help clear the lines. So they were all real excited. And a lot of them had to scrounge the money together to make the $5 payments. And they were worried if they could afford the bill, but they were still very glad to get it.
Some of the people you interviewed, I would be a bit shocked or amazed when I'd hear their birth date. You know, it was late 40s. And one gentleman talks about that he had contracted polio in the early 50s. and they didn't have electricity yet. So it's not just the late 30s.
Well, whenever I got back from the hospital, my dad had bought an electric milking machine. And we thought that was the greatest thing on earth.
Yes, and the farmers really seemed to sound like it made a big difference, and that was one of the things was the dairy farmers, because they talked about milking by hand and how much work it was and how much easier it was once they got the electric milkers. And a lot of them also talked about the lights. They really thought that was, one guy said that he thought that's whenever they started really sending homework home.
Yes, I had never thought about that. But then he says it was homework started because you could have light at night.
My name is Thomas Muskrat. My date of birth would be April 6th, born 41. I was born in Hunt Mill Holler. That's south of Oak Ridge. My favorite thing would be you can see better. You can see stuff better. It's just brightened everything up around you where you could really, just like, I guess that's when they started sending like homework from school. Yeah, you just pulled a string and turned on. It didn't have a switch on by the door. Or it just had a... If the ceiling was low, they just had a little old chain-looking thing.
And the other big thing I thought was the refrigeration. You know, you could preserve the food, and a lot of people said that they kept their milk and their dairy products either in a spring or in a bucket of water, and so once they were able to get refrigeration, it changed, really changed their lives, what they could eat.
Penny, in that 75th anniversary book, someone talks about how they kept ice before, and it was wrapped in sawdust and,
yeah,
and kind of buried, and it could stay frozen
4 months.
Yeah,
absolutely, which seems very strange to me as well. But they would actually, most farms would have a smokehouse, so whenever they butchered, they would smoke the meat, but then the smoking helped preserve it. But anything that they were going to eat fresh, as far as meat goes, this wouldn't go for vegetables, of course, but they would actually wrap it and then put it in sawdust where the ice was stored, and that sort of insulated the ice and kept it frozen for a good long while.
Scott, did you find that the people who you were talking to had all had like vivid memories of the first day or two that they had electricity?
Several of them did, yes. And they talked about how excited they were to get it. And some of them said that they didn't realize what they were missing until they actually got it. You know, that life was just seemed normal to them like it was before. But then once they got the electricity, they would never want to go back without it.
You know, I've lived here mostly since 1981, but there were a couple of communities mentioned, Hillbin Holler or something, south of Oak Ridge. I have no idea what either of those places are, or if they are.
It's near the Bell community in Adair, Oklahoma.
Okay.
That was Thomas Muskrat, and he was a very interesting interview. And he actually worked for Ozarks later, but when he was a kid, he used to go out and visit with the linemen that were bringing the lines in, and he made friends with them, and I liked his story. He was talking about one of his neighbors had television.
How does an electric cooperative work in 2018?
Well, actually, a lot of the same principles and everything are the same as they were in the 30s, because the people who get service from us are our owners. They're member owners, and we in Arkansas have territorial boundaries that establish who provides your electricity. So that remains the same. But many of the things, you vote for directors. We have an annual meeting that you can come to and hear about the workings of the cooperative during that year. We mail out an annual report that gives the statistics on lines we've built, people that have joined, and how we have done business-wise that year. Many things are similar, but it's so much more common because the main thing is we are locally owned. You know, the business is right here in town. When you pay your bill, you're paying locally. We buy our trucks from a local, you know, automobile dealer. And so everything, our thing is we are members of the community. We live here. We do business here. We're just like you are. We just happen to go to work in this office to make sure you have power.
When my family moved to rural Arkansas, we were in a very rural part of Baxter County, and we would receive the Rural Arkansas Magazine,
yes,
which was published by
Arkansas Electric Cooperatives.
Okay,
yeah.
AEC. And there was an article after we'd first moved here, 1969, November issue, that Ben Hur, which is in deep Newton County.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't get to Ben Hur by accident. You've got to be going
go
down on
there.
Purpose. Yes. There were households in Ben Hur in 1969 getting power because it just was so rugged to get there.
Yeah.
And I remember my mother, who had moved, you know, we'd moved from Kansas, Hutchinson, Kansas, which is rather urban from,
yeah,
compared
absolutely
to where we were. And she just couldn't believe. But then a few years later, we went there, and you understood why it was so,
yeah,
difficult to,
yeah,
get the,
yeah,
power there.
Yeah, usually very mountainous, lots of rugged terrain, but also, and in this part of Arkansas, it's incredibly rocky. If you've ever dug a garden, you know every shovel of dirt, you run into a rock, but also lots of trees. So it takes a lot of engineering to make that happen, but also a lot of work on the front end to clear the land and, you know, set the poles and all that sort of thing to make sure they, to bring the power and string the wire. You know, in the early days, because of the rocky terrain that's here, we actually dynamited holes for power poles. I mean, you know, they had to plant poles in places that were very difficult. So I talked to, whenever I was doing the 75th anniversary project, I talked to one man who, during his summers, whenever he was like 16 and 17 years old, he worked for Ozarks Electric, and he went out with the crews taking the dynamite and placing it in holes that they would, you know, set off charges to blow out the rock where they could actually set poles. So it was quite interesting to talk to a man of his age. At that time, he was like 90, I think.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Scott, was there anything else that surprised you when you were talking to these folks?
Well, one thing I thought was interesting is Charlene Sachs she lived on Weddington area, and she told me that they didn't have electricity yet at her house, but they had a washing machine, and they'd put it in the back of the pickup and drive down to Savoy, where their friend had electric but no washing machine.
And down at Savoy, they had electricity, and my mom and them had a friend, the Abners, and so they took the washer down there, and we would go down to her house, and they all did laundry one day and hang them on the line. And then finally we got electricity down to our place. It didn't come down that far.
One of the other things was Mr. Proctor was talking about the hardest part, he said, was driving the poles, because mm-hmm. in those days they did them by hand.
Yeah.
And even once they got the equipment, sometimes you had to set a pole somewhere where the trucks couldn't get to.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to not only dig it by hand, but you'd have to hoist and set the pole by hand. And
yeah.
so it was a lot of work, and I think you could see some of the places now when I see a pole, I think, man, that would have been hard to put it there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
especially when you see them in the distance and they're high on a mountain. The thing is, when the 2009 ice storm happened, so, you know, it came in and it destroyed probably three-fourths of our system. We had 58,000 of 70,000 at that time members who didn't have power. So we had a lot more without power than with power, and that, you know, was quite a long ordeal. But the thing that happened then, too, is there were places where poles had been set 50, 60, 70 years ago that you couldn't really get to very easily now. And when we tried with trucks, sometimes they would get stuck. So we had a process of guys hand pulling poles into remote areas to rebuild our system back in 2009, that recently. So it just kind of gave you a flavor for, wow, this is what these people, that every pole was set like this, you know, years ago when we started.
All mothers had it tough back then. They had it tough, trying to keep a family fed. And, boy, I've split enough wood on an old axe to keep that cook stove burning, and I don't see how in the world they ever cooked on it, but she did.
Penny Storms is the manager of media and public relations at Ozark Electric, and she led a project 5 years ago to chronicle the 75th anniversary of the cooperative. Scott Davis is a videographer and producer of a new documentary about the arrival of electricity to many small communities in Oklahoma and Arkansas. The formal signing of the rules of incorporation for Ozark Electric took place 80 years ago today.
Well, the thing I liked most of all about electricity was my electric guitar. Then it was in 48 or 49, I ordered a Sears and Roebuck silver-toned guitar, and it was an electric, and had it and an amplifier, and I think I gave $39 for the pair of them.
And that's from the 1971 debut album from the band Black Oak, Arkansas. It's the song When Electricity Came to Arkansas. And this is Ozarks at Large.